The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The voice of the people. News Talk 710, KNUS, Denver. Arm yourself for office conversation in the afternoon with Peter Boyles in the morning on News Talk 710, KNUS.
Good to go. Good morning, everyone. Wednesday, the 22nd of July, 2020, 710, KNUS, the voice of the people. I'm Peter Boyles. Good to have everyone here. This is going to be good Wednesday morning. Partly cloudy, says the 710 KNUS News Center. Tomorrow, 91. Afternoon storms, 92 on Friday. Please say good morning, first of all, and bring on the radio show. She used to be my neighbor, Michelle Malkin, and she was assaulted by these Antifa people, this pro-police rally in Denver. First of all, Michelle, good morning to you. Thank you so much for doing it. Good to have you back on the show, and good morning one more time. And then please,
hi.
Yeah, and please say good morning. Someone has been, I got to tell you, Michelle, I don't know how much you know about Nick, but when we were going through, when we were living up in Seattle and went to Vancouver and had that struggle against trying to stop the insanity of heroin injection, this guy was wonderful. Nick Rogers is with us. Hey, Nick, good morning. Thanks for doing the radio show. And for the people that do not know your job, your position, would you take a second and tell the audience who you are?
Hi, Pete. Good morning, and I appreciate you having me on. My name, Nick Rogers. I am currently the president of the Denver Police Protective Association. To be perfectly honest with you, that's kind of my side job. My real job, I'm a 34-year police officer in Denver, work Southwest Denver narcotics, and I've spent my entire career out on the street. So I don't have a desk job. I'm out there doing the real job, and I came in as a cop. I'm going to go out as a cop. So that's kind of who I am.
Michelle, if you would take a moment, talk about what happened at the rally in Denver on Sunday, please.
Sure. Randy Corcoran asked if I would come join him, and I had plans on Sunday and was only able to come for a small amount of time, but I absolutely jumped at the chance to do it because Randy was there for me when I arranged for Stand With ICE rallies last fall. It's my passion to stand up for law enforcement. I've done it multiple times over the years. I did a half a dozen Stand With ICE rallies, along with a rally at the White House during Obama years, when Obama refused to light the White House blue to honor the Dallas police officers who were slaughtered as some sort of retribution for Black Lives Matter's agenda. I'm the granddaughter of a police officer. My mother's father was the police chief of his village in the Philippines. And so I came out to show my support on a Sunday afternoon, and then I was supposed to drive back to host a barbecue and a dinner party. And I came and greeted everybody who was there. Obviously, there's always risks. Anytime you go out in public and do these kinds of things, especially in the aftermath of all of this George Floyd derangement syndrome, even small family gatherings out in public to support law enforcement can subject you to threats. So I understood that. But I certainly did not anticipate the kind of violent chaos that ensued. And I certainly didn't expect police officers to just stand there and watch it all happen overhead by helicopter and, of course, on the ground. And while I was up on stage, you could see this massive swarm, this slow swarm, just make its way over. And I think to me, Peter and Nick, that was the most unconscionable thing because you all know it takes a few minutes to get from the Capitol to the Center Civic Plaza. And so that's 5 minutes right there that something could have been done. And nothing was done. Nothing was done as women who were wearing Trump gear and holding their flags were throttled and strangled by other brutish women women all dressed in black and paramilitary gear, one of them who made their way right inches near me and pulled out a collapsible baton. The disparity in treatment and the double standard that the police imposed on law-abiding citizens versus known violent rioters is also unconscionable, and I think it marks the regime that we certainly live under now, which is not the land of the free and the home of the brave. It is a narco-tyranny.
Nick Rogers, why did you decide to step up and speak?
Well, I heard, I wasn't there. I heard what happened. I've made a lot of phone calls. I've watched some videos. I've done my due diligence. I won't speak until I know what I believe is the truth, because I get a lot of misinformation. A lot of people overreact. But basically what she just described is exactly what happened. And once I figured that out, I reached out and said, someone has to apologize. Somebody from the police side has to apologize, not only to Michelle, but to all the people that attended that pro-law enforcement rally. It is so wrong in every sense of any part of my being that why would we not have someone have reached out and at least offered an apology? Whether that apology means anything to anyone that was there or to Michelle, but somebody has to do it. And that's why I made this call, is to say, I'm sorry on behalf.
Our guest,
I'm sorry on behalf of the rank and file. That's not us. That's not who we are. And it just kills me that we let good people down. And I'll be honest with you. As I've done my due diligence, I did discover a couple of things. I found out that a retreat order was given by the incident commander. And we had one lieutenant step up and said, we're not leaving. And this lieutenant said, these people are going to get killed if we don't stay. So he kept his group there. And that's the only reason this thing didn't even get worse, because somebody broke ranks and decided to not retreat. And they stayed so that they could provide some assistance. And I'll be honest with you, I'm sad. It's embarrassing to me. And again, Michelle, anybody that's listening that was there, that's not the rank and file. That's not the cops. That decision was made by someone else, and it was wrong. And I'm sorry.
If I may, you're listening to Michelle Malkin, and one of the best guys ever. Michelle, I've known Nick forever, and when Stefan and myself and Mark went up and lived in Vancouver trying to stop this whole heroin, and that's, by the way, coming back, but I would daily text Nick, and Nick's a narc, and then when we lived in Seattle to watch all of that, I daily would send Nick pictures and get updates and get advice from Nick, so that's the kind of a man Nick is. If I may, and I don't want to get anybody jammed up, who gave the retreat order, the best of your knowledge, Nick? Who gave the order to retreat?
The incident commander. Pete, I'm not going to
okay,
throw
no,
him
no,
under
no,
the bus.
No, I understand that. Do you believe this?
I know who it is.
I understand. I think I
and
do,
I'm,
too.
I'm also not going to tell you the guy that saved the day. He's a freaking hero in my mind.
Listen, here's one, Michelle, and this goes back to another Nick Rogers moment. There is a monument outside the Cherokee building for fallen officers. It was trashed, and the former chief, Chief White, made the police stay inside the Cherokee building. In fact, I was told they used their handcuffs to keep the doors closed from the protesters who were trying to get into the building that day, and they trashed this for men and women killed in the line of duty. That was one of the opening salvos. Now we come to this. Michelle, what would you like to ask Nick? Maybe I step out of line here. Maybe you'd like to ask something.
Well, I'd like to thank him for being stand up. I'd like to thank him for understanding the gravity of this situation. And, you know, I was shoved and pushed around, and I had stuff sprayed in my face. But it was nothing compared to the several people who were beaten badly and brutally. That's why I screamed. I mean, you can watch the entire live stream on my Twitter feed, 30 minutes, and how it completely degenerated from a nice gathering of patriotic people who were there to back the blue into complete anarchy. And you know what? Those of us who attended and those of us who organized it certainly weren't prepared. And I know that you've been very vocal about these kinds of events, Peter. And I suppose you could say, I told you so. And
no.
Feel a little bit of, you know, schadenfreude about
no,
the whole
no,
thing.
No, not at all.
And if anything comes from it, and if I can just finish, if anything comes from it, and this is the message I am sending now, because I've been one of those people who's encouraged people to get off of the sidelines, because I have felt so passionately for more than a quarter century that we can't just sit in our offices, that we can't just sit in front of keyboards, that we need to be politically and civically and actively engaged. But if you're going to do it, you can't rely on the police. And I certainly appreciate Nick's sincerity and his heart. But the fact is, when push comes to bloody shove, ordinary citizens who want to back the blue. And by the way, since this happened, I've had invitations, half dozen of them all over the country, to come and travel and be with them. I can't do that because I can't pay for security. I'm not some multi-million dollar celebrity. And you get what you pay for. If you have volunteer security, they're not going to be prepared because we're up against paramilitary forces that are supported by police chiefs like Paul Pazin, who linked arms with these people and who I heard the other day blaming us, the law-abiding citizens standing for police, for what happened. He blames the victim. He blames the victim. And unfortunately, rank-and-file cops, no matter how they feel about our support for them, are going to follow orders. And they're going to answer to their bosses who answer to the mob.
We have Michelle Malkin, who, of course, was beaten on that day, and, of course, the one and only Nick Rogers. This flies in the face of Paul Pazin's appearance with Stefan and also with Dan Kaplis. And she's absolutely right. I listened to both of them. I made the analysis that the woman wore a short skirt, and so that's why she got raped. But and back to thinking, feeling good about none of these things, I truly expected Randy has done this five times before. For whatever reason, and I think I know this, is a new chief, a new regime, this mayor, the city council, manager of safety. But watching everything that's happened leading up to it, the rioting, the destructiveness in downtown Denver, the blaming the cops. What I want to know is, because yesterday when this conversation got going, again, Michelle, and I said anybody who went there truly expected the Denver police to do their job, i.e. protect them. Now, we went through this before with Chief Metz in Aurora. The first time that the ICE detention center got taken down, Metz, I really do believe, gave exactly the same order that I think Pazin gave for Sunday. The second time, and they decided they were going to be cops, and so the Antifa people didn't show up. Somebody on the inside knows stuff. Somebody tells somebody. In the case of Aurora, Michelle, somebody inside of that city council, there's plenty of self-proclaimed Marxists, told those Antifa characters, don't come because these guys got their turtle suits on and they're going to be cops. What I thought was going to happen on Sunday, big deal. What I think is I thought five other times the cops have shown up, five other times they'd stand up and they would protect, but that didn't happen. And that's where that gets off the leash, where the wheels come off. And I come back to Nick. Nick, why? Why did the guy stand down?
Pete, I've looked at it. I've been at these events before. I know how we operate. We've done hundreds of protests, hundreds, and we have never used that tactic before, especially when things are at such a heightened right now. It's such a heightened tense of a sense of, you know, it's just everybody's hypersensitive. People are angry. People are, you know, coming off the COVID lockdown, the riots. We failed in our tactics. And I'll tell you, I'll be honest with you. I think I know why. Because this event was a pro-law enforcement rally. And I believe that discussions were had. And I, like Pete, this is my gut feeling, and I think I'm right. I think they underreacted because they didn't want to have the appearance that they were taking one side or the other. And so they failed those people.
Michelle's right. That's laughable. And
I'm sorry. Okay. This police chief who blamed us kept harping on the fact that it was our fault that we didn't have enough private security in place, even as he admitted that 76 of your colleagues, Nick, 76 officers have been injured by these so-called peaceful agitators since the George Floyd incident, right? The Capitol has been trashed. More than $1 million worth of damage, including all of the statues like the ones that you mentioned, Peter. And he expects us to have provided enough security when he can't keep 76 officers safe from these animals. And then I've got all of these sideline, after-the-fact analysts telling me, well, why weren't you carrying? Why didn't you do something about it?
Yeah,
why were you wearing sandals and hoop earrings? It doesn't matter what I wore.
That's right.
And it doesn't matter what I carried. Because if I had brandished my weapon, if I had used a weapon, like that Antifa woman in all black had her collapsible baton waving in front of me, what would have happened to me? I would be facing felony assault charges. I wouldn't be talking to you. I'd be in jail. The law-abiding are the criminals, and the criminals are protected.
It's Nick Rogers.
That's what we live in now.
Nick Rogers, head of the police union, Michelle Malkin, about what happened on Sunday. I like anybody else, there's been a sea change in this country. And the media coverage of what happened, you know, all over the country, and I'm sure, Michelle, you've collected this, how this was portrayed. Yet in Denver, the betrayal was really horrible. In fact, the only thing Channel 9 did was ask whether or not the Denver police cut the gas loose. No, these people, I mean, but again, you would think on a First Amendment situation, and Randy pulled a permit, as they say, this is his sixth time, and I'm told Pazin told Randy, I don't know this, I'm told it, we don't want you here. What the hell kind of a deal is that? We don't want you here. Nick, what do you, I mean, guys are coming to say,
Pete, I can speak to that. They didn't tell him we don't want you here. They told them we think something bad might happen, which it kind of flies in the face
then,
of
then they
reaction.
Knew then they knew yeah
they
then
knew.
They knew yeah
exactly. So they tried to talk them out of doing it. They tried to talk them out and said, look, will you go to the Pepsi Center where we can protect you better. I don't think that's not an excuse, because let's just call it what it is. They got a permit, for Christ's sake, from the 28th of May until the 1st of June, 5 days of riots. Antifa didn't pull a single permit.
That's right.
I mean, we reacted and did what we did during those riots, and we failed on Sunday. And I have an analogy, Pete, that I thought about. You know, in these situations, whether it's pro-abortion, anti-abortion, And those two groups come to meet in the middle, and they're coming at each other. We would never let those two groups come face to face. We would form a skirmish line, and we would not allow them to physically assault or do anything to the other side, right? Whether you're pro-life, whatever, it doesn't matter. See, we as police officers, we're not able to root for one side or the other, like the Broncos and the Raiders. We don't get a root for one side or the other. We're not allowed to let one side win. But guess what? We did on Sunday.
Yeah.
And for that, we were wrong. And for that, an apology should be made to Michelle and every person that was there.
You root for the First Amendment. You root for Michelle's right and Randy's right and everybody's right to be there and say what they wanted to say. But these people came and attacked them. Michelle, this is a sincere apology. This is a very good man. What do you say to the apology?
Well, like I said, I appreciate it. But then there's, what do we do now?
Yeah.
Okay, because as Nick said, and I appreciate, again, I appreciate your sincerity, and I appreciate your heart. And, you know, you mentioned that you're speaking on behalf of the rank and the file. I haven't heard from anybody else, which I think is worth noting, because when we did the Stand with ICE rallies, I heard from ICE agents all across the country. We had ICE leadership that met with us beforehand at rallies that attended the rallies as well, in part to make sure that we were safe. And so I'd like to believe, Nick, that you do represent the folks there and that they feel the same way. And I'm especially appreciative of this lieutenant that you said, you know, kept other people safe who had stayed around for, you know, almost an hour after I and others had left. But the bottom line here is that there were political decisions that were made, that the backlash from the cop-hating mob was too high a price to pay in order to protect our basic constitutional rights to freedom of speech, freedom of association, and freedom of assembly. And that sends a message. And the message is, you know, maybe it's not worth it to come out for ordinary citizens to risk our safety and our lives to stand for the blue. And it raises an existential question that if we back the blue, what happens when the blue doesn't back us? Yeah. And so this becomes a larger issue of our right to armed self-defense and our right to protect our Second Amendment rights, because if we can't depend on you, then we have to depend on ourselves. And this is what is really alarming and disturbing, because we now have elites in place, whether they're police chiefs who kneel before Black Lives Matter and Antifa, or whether they're Soros district attorneys and circuit attorneys who are going to turn around and put law-abiding people in jail for opposing these people. Who do we have left to protect us?
Yesterday, in a heated part of this, although it doesn't apply, it applies, played Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Ohio, when they say, we're finally on our own. And what dawned on me after listening and watching and listening and watching, Michelle, I think you hit the chord. We're on our own. With respect to Nick, and I heard from tons of Denver cops, tons of Jefferson County guys and Douglas County guys, steam's coming out of their ears. But a little bit too late, and now what? So, Michelle,
they're going to do the same thing.
Of course.
You're
going to
do the same thing, Nick. Tell me you're going to have rank-and-file cops, to defy a stand-down order, defy a retreat order and stand with us. It's not going to happen.
Well, but Michelle, it did happen because that SWAT lieutenant, he did not listen to the stand-down order. He did not retreat. If he had not stayed, it would have been a lot worse. I'm telling you right now, he's a friend of mine. I won't mention his name. He'd be mad at me if I did, but he's a hero. And so he broke ranks. And so maybe that's what has to happen. Maybe somebody stands up the next time and says, nah, because I'll be honest with you, Michelle, if I was there, And again, you don't know me, and I don't know you. And I promise you, I would have broke ranks for you.
The real question now, Michelle, is see if this guy, this lieutenant, ends up out of DIA writing tickets.
He won't. I promise you guys, he won't.
Okay.
I won't let that happen to him.
Michelle, I got one more question because I know everybody's got this time. Michelle, had you known that what was going to happen was going to happen, how differently would you have approached it? And how differently wonder Randy would have done differently? Because there were elderly people that got smacked around down there, and it's always been my fear. What would you have done differently for you personally? Because you got the heart of a lion, but what would you have done differently?
Well, I would have gone, and my husband would have been incredibly mad at me, I'm sure, because that's the kind of person I am. That's why I defied all of the doubters when we did our very first Stand with ICE rally in Aurora, because it's something that I believed in, and I wanted to do more than just talk the talk. I wanted to walk the walk. That's how I've lived my life. That's how I've conducted my career. So, of course, I would have gone. But, yeah, I would have worn combat boots. And, yeah, I would have had more armed security with me, and I would have made sure that there were enough people there to make sure that they would not have come past the stage. And I've talked with a lot of my friends, many of them women, because if you pay attention, Peter, you'll notice that it's women in large part who are leading these anti-lockdown rallies, anti-mask mandate rallies, pro-police rallies.
If I may,
they would have made sure that there were men in front of us, not just behind us.
If you watch that tactic, I'll go back to that. They send the women first. The men are behind
them. Yeah, they do. That's what they do.
They send the women first. Yes, yes. So, please, Nick.
Michelle, I don't know you. I've seen some of your stuff. I've watched some of your stuff since this has occurred. I hope you don't give up the fight because it's too important, and you got to just, I've always said the glass is half full, and I will not change my thoughts on that. And you can't either. You can't give up. I mean, I know it's right now the world's upside down and things aren't right, but there's too many good cops. There's too many good people. People are going to do the right thing. And I mean, this was a bad day for us, but We have a code of ethics in the operations manual. And it starts out, as a law enforcement officer, my fundamental duty is to serve mankind, safeguard lives, property, to protect the innocent against deception, the weak against oppression or intimidation, and the peaceful against violence or disorder. We violated our own code of ethics. We can never do it again, period.
Michelle.
It can't happen again. I'll stand up with you, Michelle.
Right.
Don't give up, please.
Michelle, last comment.
I appreciate that, Nick. I appreciate that. It's hard to listen to you and not want to just cry my eyes out. But I want to send a message to your colleagues, the ones who are silent, the ones who just followed orders, and if their conscience didn't bother them, I'm talking to them, not you, because more of them need to be like you, Nick. It is humiliating for ordinary citizens to go to a Back the Blue rally and then watch as their fellow attendees are beaten over the head with longboards and bullhorns. It is humiliating to go to a Back the Blue rally and watch the police officers watch women be strangled by Antifa people who want police officers dead. And it is a huge disincentive to hold another Back the Blue rally, to risk our lives when police officers follow the orders of police chiefs and elites who don't care that statues are coming down, that the historic American nation is literally burning every single day. It's been 55 days since George Floyd has been exploited as a pretext to defund the police and to undermine law and order in this country. My parents are immigrants from the Philippines who came here to secure the American dream. I mentioned that I'm the granddaughter of a police officer. I've got blue in my blood too, Nick. And if rank and file police officers are just going to dutifully follow along and watch our country and watch fellow citizens be threatened for standing up for it, we're not going to come out for you anymore.
This may be the most...
You're on your own. We're on our own.
See there? Michelle.
Bottom line.
Michelle, it's Peter. Can we get you back tomorrow by yourself? Can we get you a drop on the show tomorrow just to let you rock?
Yes, I'll talk to your...
Nick, I'll call you this afternoon. Michelle, I'll put you on hold. Nick, I love you, man. I'm proud of you. You are who I've always believed. Nick Rogers, everyone, Union Head. Thank you, Michelle. Love you. Both of you guys are on hold. Probably the most powerful half-hour talk radio I've been involved in a long time. 710 KNUS.
Listen live at radio.com. We now return to the Peter Boyle Show.
The fallout from that will last a long time. Good morning to it. More of the best are coming up. John Bandemir, Randy Corcoran. But that was amazing. That was just sitting and listening to Nick and to Michelle. She's back on tomorrow, 95. The high today. Good morning, everyone. You got a vehicle you're not using. Ready to upgrade the one you have. We're talking about the insanity of the coverage of the homeless community. Double speak, no good, fill in the blank. You need to make some changes. Joe Williams, the hitman, called me right before 4th of July, and they got the hitmobile, and they turned it in, and Vincent took care of it. Vince was on the show yesterday. Look, the answer to the insanity in Denver right now is sobriety, work, and accountability, and the rest of it is John Hickenlooper crap. Since 83, Step Denver has been giving men the opportunity to overcome addiction to rebuild their lives. So last year, our listeners, Morning Show listeners, donated 154 vehicles, motorcycles, boats, RVs. We had 2.2 million out of that. Contact Step Denver today and donate a vehicle, running or not. They'll tow it in. They'll bring it in. Then they take them, they fix them, paint them, tune them up, put them out there, and then they sell them. And that's the price, the number that you get for your tax deduction. They're simply the best. Call Vincent, call Paul, get a hold of the guys, 303-296-9020, 303-296-9020, stepdenver.org, stepdenver.org, stepdenver.org. Please say good morning. There's not going to be a better hour of radio for the next 25 years. Say good morning. Welcome back to the radio show. First of all, John Bandemir joins us, and then the one and only counselor at large. We had to black out our own phones because of what just happened, Randy Corcoran. We'll begin. Randy, good morning to you. And I don't know if you had a chance to listen to Nick and Michelle, but that was what a moment.
Yeah. Good morning, Peter. It was just captivating radio. The emotion on both sides was so real and genuine. It just doesn't get any better than that. And I'm grateful that everybody who came down on Sunday has started this awakening for others around the state and around the country.
Now, please say good morning to really one of the best. He is, again, if I have that list of great people I have an opportunity to become friends with. John Bandemir is here. Good morning, sir, and welcome back to the radio show. And, again, thank you for being on the show, John.
Absolutely. Boy, I'll tell you what, that was really powerful. Boy, I listened to that. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, sir, I can. I can hear you very well. Thank you.
Yeah, no, that was really, I agree with you. That was probably the most powerful time because you had real emotion. And that's what, right now, it just seems like there's been so much fake stuff going on that that was really good.
Well, it was, I'll tell you how that comes together because we can talk about it now. I never mentioned it was Nick until this morning. In the aftermath of what happened to Randy and Michelle and everyone else, Nick and I go back, and Nick called me, and I said, "What happened?" Nick said, "I'll let you know." And then I talked to Nick, and Nick says, I want to apologize, Peter." And Nick's the head of the union, so you know he's got some stroke. So Michelle spoke yesterday, not face to face, but they did a 40-minute private phone call. And to their credit, both of them decided to bring it on the air. And what a smack in the face that is to Paul Pazin. What a smack it is into the face of the mainstream press in Denver. But that'll be the fallout, and that's the stuff that Randy will be on. Now, let's move to what happened yesterday in Jeffco. Counselor, you're first. What did the judge rule yesterday about the Bandemirs?
The judge dismissed the case that Jefferson County Public Health brought against the Bandemirs with no restraining order, no injunction. That particular case is over. Clearly, that's only round one of what's going to be a long legal battle in challenging the ever-expanding power and reach that these health departments and Governor Polis are exercising over our entire state. But it was really nice to walk out of that courtroom yesterday knowing that that case was done.
Why do you think, either one of you jump in, why do you think the judge ruled that way? After we knew this had to be done, this was, again, Dr. Johnson and his minions. Why do you think the judge ruled the way she did, Randy?
Well, I think Jefferson County Public Health put her in a situation where she determined she had little choice at 5 o'clock the night before our ruling yesterday morning. They issued a new public health order. I think instead of a numbered order, they should just call it the Bandimere Speedway order.
Yeah.
where they are now imposing on all businesses in Jefferson County the kind of micromanaging control that they were demanding that this judge hand over to them with regard to the operation of Bandimere Speedway.
John, how do you feel, and how's the family feel today?
Well, that's a great question. You know, we want to be, see, I think so many times people are confused about whether we want to be in compliance. We want to be in compliance if it makes sense. And what I mean by that statement is that when we take and we have people come into our facility and they tell us what we're supposed to do, so we do that. But then it's so confusing, Peter. This 175 people deal is really confusing. It's 175 people per event activity. But at this point in time, no one has been able to give us a real solid, what is an event activity? And so you see, the point being is it all started on the 4th of July. We had 7,000 people roughly in the facility. I thought it was really great, the TV coverage that we got as far as showing social distancing. People were virtually doing what they were supposed to do.
Oh, yeah.
But they didn't wear masks. And of course, how do you do that when it's hot outside? And I don't know. I mean, we tell people that we recommend it, but you can't go all around and beat them over the head and make them wear one. If that makes sense.
Well, the government obviously thinks they can, and plus they sent rats in there. I mean, the whole thing just smells. And
it makes it look right now like we have been out of compliance.
Of course,
the article in the newspaper, and I told my wife this morning as I read it, I said, I wonder where this gal was at that wrote this article. I don't think she was in the same courtroom as I was.
Well, but yes, she was. But I have this new theory, and I got to pause and come back. But I no longer, and Randy, I don't know how much you moved the show this morning, but it dawned on me, particularly after this Channel 9 piece on, quote, the community of homelessness, quit calling them reporters and anchors and quit calling them journalists. They are simply political activists or propagandists, and anybody who thinks that Channel 9 are reporters or that what happened to John in the papers are reporters. These people aren't reporters. They're not anchors. They're not the media. They're not journalists. I don't know, Randy, do you agree? They are propagandists and political activists, and they did a job on John again. I got to do this, fellas, because we went late with the other guys. So everybody back on hold. Randy Corcoran and John Bandimere on hold, coming up this book, and it's an amazing book, on a history book called The Mosquito. Our friends at Urban Lights, they're open again at all this great selections of design markets from around the world. You should see the stuff. If you're thinking, oh, this is a great time of the year, somebody's telling me how close fall is coming. Whoa. But dedicated to keeping your shopping experience as safe as possible. Place is huge. Overhead fans. And the overhead fans are just amazing. We have one in our home. And they have a beautiful 20,000 square foot showroom to browse their expanded outdoor indoor lighting galleries. Lights from Kitchener Lighting. All these guys, don't forget, I mean, inside lighting, outside lighting, the place is huge. Don't forget to check out, I'm telling you, ceiling fans are the answer. Great selection. They have 150 fans on display. Urban Lights Denver, 7 days a week. Off I-25 in Santa Fe, online, urbanlightsdenver.com, urbanlightsdenver.com. Local lighting experts bringing genuine value to your lighting fixtures, ceiling fan purchases. Our friends, 7 days a week, look at them online. It's called urbanlightsdenver.com.
News Talk 710 KNUS. Listen live at radio.com. We now return to the Peter Boyle Show.
We're not going to get many mornings like this. 7:47, 13 before the hour, with apologies. We go to Gabe with Alpine Planning, looking at the numbers. I'm going to ask you to do it quick, Gabe, this morning because of guests. Thank you. Gabe, you
got, Pete, happy Wednesday. Starting off slightly bouncing around the red and the green, currently Dow's up 58. NASDAQ is up 28, and S&P is up 7. This is coming off news that the Department of Health and Human Services did a $1.95 billion order with Pfizer for a vaccine drug. So, as always, Pete, have some listeners have some questions on their portfolio, financial plan. Have them give us a call at Alpine Planning Group. We're standing by.
Thanks for doing this right, man. 303-843-0918. This is the kind of folks they are, you guys. They'll come and help you when you need them. 303-843-0918. Investing is a matter of trust. This young man, Gabe's the best. Thanks, son. We'll talk again tomorrow. Thank you, man.
Securities and investment advisory services offered through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA SIPC and registered investment advisor. Alpine Planning Group and Woodbury Financial Services, Inc. are not affiliated entities. 14 West Dry Creek Circle, Littleton, Colorado, 80120.
All right, John Bandemir is with us, and Randy Corpin, talk show host extraordinaire and, of course, attorney. And we're talking about Jeffco's injunction against Bandemir. The premier question now for you, John, if we could, is the Mile High Nationals, everyone's favorite event. What has happened? What will happen?
At this point in time, it has been postponed. It hasn't been deleted, but it's been postponed to a later date. We were supposed to have it the 7th, 8th, and 9th of August, and so that's been moved. Really, nothing has come together on that. They've had two national events, and now our national event will take place in Indy. Actually ours took place last weekend, but it's they're running it with just a few thousand people. When I say a few, maybe 2,200 people. There's no way it can work. I guess the thing I would say is this. I talked to my son last night, and we were having a conversation about this whole thing. And, you know, it's easy for us to stay basically in pretty much compliance and everything that needs to be done with these smaller events like test and tunes and so on. And I don't think we anticipate any kind of an issue with the county health on that. But that doesn't keep us alive. And so the time is coming really fast that we have to make a decision, because if we can't run like this weekend, for example, would have been the truck invasion. Mm-hmm. And the truck invasion event is basically Hispanic. It's a wonderful event that we have annually, but about 10,000 people. And, you know, that's just not going to happen. It's just one of the things right now that we're facing some real major decisions. And Randy's been just a man. What a blessing he's been in our life. Wow.
He's my guy. I raised him from a pup, John.
Yeah.
Into the mad dog that he is today. Counselor, I'm sorry, John, please, if you would.
No, all I was going to say is that, you know, and I'm just quoting, it says, it seems like everybody wanted to work things out, the judge says, in a concerted effort, but things got out of hand. Basically, never has anything ever really got out of hand.
Yeah.
The only thing that gets out of hand is the fact that people are together enjoying life and outside where it's been proven that the disease or the virus is dead. So I'm trying to be a good citizen, not, you know, counselor can share.
Randy, your thoughts, and again, we got about 4 minutes. Your thoughts?
Well, just by way of example, the NHRA protocols for the Mile High Nationals, 56 pages for dealing with the fan and performer, the racer side of the event, and then 37 pages for employee protocols, all of which were forwarded to Jefferson County Health during these ongoing discussions that Bandemir, the family had with the health department without lawyers present, just sitting down and trying to talk this through. And even that level of detail and protection was not good enough for Jefferson County Health or the Colorado Health Department. So we either fight and win this thing or we lose Bandemir forever.
Yeah. You know, one of the moments that I talked to somebody is when you when they came with guns to take John's license. Randy, I don't want to put John in the middle. What the hell are these people thinking?
Yeah, this is a complete power trip. This is all about intimidation. These orders, the way they change, but then they refer back to seven previous orders. There's no way that any normal citizen, even with a bank of lawyers, could make their way through these rules and regulations. And that's really part of the point. That's part of the plan. It is to take control, beat people down with the ultimate goal of making sure that Donald Trump is not reelected in November. Frankly, that's what it all comes down to.
John, how are you? You're one of the best I know. How do you feel? What are you looking forward to? And final thoughts in this segment.
Peter, thanks for asking. Right now, I have real concern for my family. I have a son that's not doing well. And bottom line is we really are, there's no question, we know where our faith is, we know where our trust is, and we know the Lord will pull us through this. And I'm expecting, honestly, a miracle. And I'm just waiting for it. So that's it.
John, I will call you. I'll call you mid-morning. Randy, I want you on a show tomorrow, but we'll all talk after the show. Randy, you've really, really shined these last couple of weeks. Bless you. John, you're the man. I'll call you this morning and see what I can do to help. Everybody's on hold to talk. Your book, Randy, tomorrow. On the other side is this remarkable book, The Mosquito. But what an hour that of talk. I won't top that one. It's not going to happen. Billy Thorpe, put it together. Partly cloudy, 95. You hold on. Come right back after this.